Well, they called it a risk on rally on Wall Street, and whatever it was, it came to a bit of a halt last night. Indeed, markets in Asia also seem to have taken their cue from the US. So let us assess what is going on over there. Of course, it happened after Donald Trump gave a big and, as always, controversial news conference where he alluded to business booming in the US, but some doubts about that. So to get some perspective on that, indeed, what else is moving at the end of this trading week, let us talk to Share Radio Breakfast favourite Chris Bailey, who is hopefully on the line. Good morning to you, Chris.
Hello, Nigel. Good morning to you.
OK, well, so let us start with those big US benchmarks. I mean, they've had a pretty good record-breaking run. Even Mr. Trump referred to it, but it all seems to come to a bit of a shattering halt.
Yeah, that's right, and it's often the way, isn't it? Mr. Trump tweeted out yesterday, you know, he's so excited about the US stock market run, and that was before any tax plans he was going to ultimately unveil. But after 4 days of successive record highs across not just one, but four US stock market indices, you're right, Nigel, that was the best run, by the way, since 1995. You did come to a slight halt yesterday, a slight pause in the US market's ascension since the start of the Trump presidency. But in the wider scheme of things, no great problem. But clearly there are bigger debates out there still to ponder.
So what is weighing in the minds of investors then who have been buying Wall Street stocks?
Look, you've got two clear thought processes here. The first is that Mr. Trump is good for growth. He's good for productivity. His fiscal reforms, his tax and spending plans are going to boost the US economy. That's behind much of the US stock market rally. Simply put, if he cuts corporate tax rates, that's good for US corporate earnings, and hence the sort of the value put on them goes up, and hence the stock market goes up. And because America leads the world, this pulls everything else up. The contra view is that, of course, Mr. Trump is a pragmatist, maybe a sort of in a confrontational way, will mess around with trade flows and uncertainty. You mix that up with what's going on in China in terms of their economic growth levels and Europe. That's the alternative view of where the world will ultimately end up in 2017-18. My view is that it's a middle ground as appropriate. I think this is a stock selection world, a world where you've got to get specific with your risk and specific with your opportunities, and not get too wound up by the macroeconomic debate. Look for it. Look for the specifics. Mm. Don't take the general.
I mean, you were pointing out to me the other day how pollsters keep getting it wrong. Are you actually saying that it's almost becoming a bit of a waste of time to follow kind of news events, macroeconomic events so closely at all?
Well, they always have an influence, and on the day or in the shorter term, it can be hugely influential. We all know that people are making, in the stock market, individual buy and sell decisions, and that can be hugely influenced by press conferences, by bust-ups, by excitable newspaper headlines and the like. But in the medium to longer term, and by that I mean over the fullness of 2017 into 2018, I think you've got to take a step back. You've got to look at what's really happening out there. And this is where things like company analysis, where sort of, if you like, a real appraisal of the data can come and become a bit more interesting. So you're right, polls have been, let's face it, useless insights over the last year or so. We've all been embarrassed by our inability to predict events. But by contrast, if you get back to that sort of real data, real economic data, real company data, take your cues from that and invest appropriately, I think that's probably a much more sensible view than a excitable newspaper headline or press conference soundbite.
I suppose one example of what you're talking about here, about being careful about a kind of overanalyzing the big thrust of events, is what has happened with the pound, because obviously it has got cheaper. That has benefited a number of companies. We've seen that. And yet, I mean, one thing that we picked up on this week has been how major companies, I mean, the two most recent ones that spring to mind are Heineken and Rolls-Royce, miscalculated their hedging or whatever they do to try and benefit from, or at least not suffer from these big changes in currencies. And companies are getting on the wrong side of these changes, which you would have thought would benefit them.
Yeah, that's right. It's currency is always a complex thing, and you know, we've had this view based on how the FTSE 100 has performed over the last 6 or so months, performing extremely well because the pound has fallen. That's boosted the profits of American and Asian earners, such as miners and pharma companies. That a falling pound is good for corporate profits or good for corporations in the UK. But it's a bit more complex than that because companies are very global. Companies, as you say, Heineken, obviously a Dutch company, but sells beer all over the world. Rolls-Royce in defense and aircraft engines, again, an inherently global company with lots of dollar revenues. You know, they're well aware of these currency fluctuations. They've had to deal with them for many generations. And consequently, they put in place these hedging processes to sort of lower the sort of the volatility. But it can bite them where it hurts when you get something like the pound falling out of bed, as it has done over the last 6-7 months. So, yeah, currency is complex. But the thing is, you take a look at, let's say, Heineken's share price, it shrugged that off. Mm. It said, my goodness, we're much more interested in how much beer you're selling and what price you're doing and deals you're striking in Brazil and stuff like that. Rolls-Royce had the opposite problem, which is, you know, they've got bigger issues to worry about. Everyone was talking about that $4 billion loss they had on the hedging book. But the reality is they'll get that back in the future when they get those American revenues for jet engines. For Rolls-Royce, it's much more about what profits and what cash flow are you going to generate over the next year or two? Is there a plan? Can you bounce back from these 5 profit warnings in 2 years and stuff like that? So ultimately, I think people are looking through it, but it makes great newspaper headlines. Mm. And undoubtedly, it moves the numbers around short term. So again, I would say on the pound, I think its biggest influence, to be honest, is probably on our holidays and whether it makes those more expensive or not. Companies are quite well attuned to working out what to do with it and not get too hang out to dry by it.
And of course, the pound's position is Brexit talks related. We know the Prime Minister is talking with the French Prime Minister in Downing Street later. She has been saying she doesn't want to cherry pick which parts of European Union membership she wants to keep. But of course, we all know that business is having to kind of try and position itself to second guess what life will be like. And I just wondered again how profitable it is for the investor to try and look at all those factors. And we're talking to a business a bit later about what planning it's doing for this.
Yeah, no, it is a clear source of uncertainty. You look at any opinion poll, this is a major source of business and individual uncertainty. And quite rightly so, because Europe is a huge chunk of UK trade. And that relationship is clearly highly influential on economic growth, on employment and wage growth and everything else in the economy. So I think it's quite right and proper that people should be concerned. My view would be, though, that you flick it over the other way. In Europe, similarly so, Europe should also be concerned about having an aggressive post-Brexit economic relationship with the UK, because the European economy is still struggling. It's still trying to bounce back from many years of low economic performance. And consequently, a feeling that there'll be a pragmatic deal, to me, it seems to me the most sensible outcome. So I think from a business perspective, businesses undoubtedly are going to be a little bit more shorter term. They're not going to focus too much on making those big long-term investments, and that will impact. But similarly, they're going to be pragmatic, and they're going to say, look, at this moment in time, the pound is cheap. That's good for our exports. At this moment in time, the European economy is getting a bit better. And at this moment in time, at least the UK economy hasn't fallen off a cliff. You put that all into the mixer, there's scope to be doing business. And business people, I'd say, are nothing but pragmatics. And my view would be, keep on going, and consequently on investment, there are still opportunities. So, you know, don't worry, keep your fingers crossed, and assume that technically and generally the glass is generally half full and we all work out things in the medium term. So, you know, ultimately, it'll be fine. I think Brexit will clearly occur. But will it be the absolute disaster for the UK economy? Of course not. There'll be opportunities from it.
OK, well, it's been a pleasure to have you chatting to us this morning. Thanks very much indeed. That is Chris Bailey from Financial Orbit. Always a welcome guest here on Chair Radio Breakfast.